Welcome to episode 31 of Agency Phonics.
I'm here with Rebecca McIntyre-Smith from Primate Agency
up in Edinburgh.
How are you this afternoon?
Good, thank you.
It's glorious and sunny up there today, so it's novel.
So I'm really looking forward to having a great conversation with you. I just want to say a quick thank you as always. First of all, thank you to you for coming today because you are actually officially the last guest of our first year of Agency Phonics.
So I can't believe we've done 31 episodes in a year.
And we've learned a lot actually. We always said it'd be a 3-year journey, Agency Phonics. And just want to thank everyone for supporting us, for subscribing and following, and all the lovely comments. It means a lot. And I think it's working really well now. We're up to about 50,000 episode listens a year now. The volumes are really gaining momentum. So again, thank you to everyone listening and supporting us, and also to all of our wonderful guests. And as I announced on the last show, we've finally managed to secure a sponsor. I don't think everyone really realizes that all of the community work that we do, and AC Finance is all basically a not-for-profit social enterprise. We've all pretty much Cactus funds everything, whereas some people charge for membership or they get money from advertising. We get none of that stuff. But we've been getting a lot of people recently asking us, just clients moving over to Forecast. It seems like the last 6 months, Forecast, the project management platform, has just been going from strength to strength. And so they rang us up to tell us that a couple of their clients had joined, and we started talking, and it just seemed to make sense. We're a big fan of their product, and they're a big fan of what we're doing. So we have a sponsor, which is great, because now we have some more funds to invest more in our vodcast, and we may even get a bit more professional now with better intros and things like that. But hopefully we won't lose our slightly down to earth, rough and ready touch. So thank you to Forecast. We're going to put details about them in the show notes. Do check them out. Excuse me. I hope that's not a COVID cough. Second of all, thank you to Wirehive. They do provide us with all their studio free of charge, even though we're streaming this live from Hampshire and Edinburgh. We've got Caitlin in the studio, which is basically taking both the feeds in and sending it up to YouTube Live. So thank you to Caitlin for doing that. Thank you to Wirehive for everything they do. Again, check out Wirehive, fantastic company, anything around technology and cloud. They're the guys to go to. So now I've got those bits out the way, Rebecca, I can just start by saying that Mark Probert, who works for Cactus, obviously based in Edinburgh, was saying to me a while ago, I need to get, you on the vodcast. And then you kind of did a Pecha Kucha with us in the community. I think most people know what a Pecha Kucha is. It's 20 slides in 20 seconds a slide. So it's about 7:40, I think, presentation about, we do talks on your journey and your story, and you told your story, and oh my God, I think I never cried so much in my life. I forgot to get the tissues next to me now. So it's going to go one of two ways. I know, right? I'm going to be smiling and laughing or bawling my eyes out. So I was really touched by your story, and it just reminded me that I had to get you on the show. And I'm really delighted that you're here today to share your story with us. And you're in the office.
I'm in the office. Yeah, it's so nice. It's me. Oh, I just love coming in. I love that we moved into this office last year. And I just don't feel like we've got enough out of it yet. And it was part of our big growth plan. And there's tons of space. Socially distancing is not a problem in this office. But it's so, you can see it's so light, it's airy. I love it. I love being in here.
Tell me about the drawing. I'm guessing the primate is the connection.
Yeah. This is our monkey, Michelangelo.
Of course. Yes, yeah, I see now.
If I get out of the way, you can see it.
Amazing. So who drew it?
It's awesome. Gab, one of our designers, our ex-designers actually now, he's moved back to Spain. He's an incredible illustrator, and he did all of our kind of brand illustrations. And we still use them. You'll see them on the blog. You'll see them on the website. There's lots of hidden kind of monkey illustrations throughout. It's like a little added extra. So it's not the core of the brand, but you will find them a lot.
So tell me first, why Primate? Where did the name come from?
So why Primate? So I didn't found the agency. I muscled my way in a couple of years after the guy started, and I assured them they needed me. But the name Primate, it's kind of, it connects both evolution and that digital evolution. And the guys ran through lots of different names, lots of different ideas. And at the time, kind of when the agency started, responsive was like the next big thing, and they really wanted to make a push and really lead with that and prove that we could do it better and faster than anybody else. And so that primate and that evolution, just the synergy worked. So that's why, nice. That's why Primate.
So when did the business start?
2011.
And when did you join?
2015.
Okay. So what's the story around you joining? How did that come about?
So I first met Gordon, our other managing partner, back at another agency, Hee Haw. And I literally kind of fell into this industry. I, you know, kind of like all the students probably this year, like COVID year, I graduated in 2010, straight into the recession. It was really messy. There was really no work. I was a journalist, you know, nobody was hiring. I moved down to London for 2 weeks before I'd even signed my contract. I was redundant again and back on a train. And so I was doing freelance voiceover for Hee Haw, and they invited me in to interview for the account manager role. And I'm going, well, I don't do maths. Like, this is not my thing. I'm a wordsmith. This is not me. They explained a bit about it, and I was hired on the spot, which was great. And then kind of dropped into this agency world. And I discovered Gordon one lunchtime, chatted away to him and persuaded him to give me like Web 101. So I actually knew what I was doing. And so we knew each other from there. And then actually like a month later, he left and the guys went away and set up Primate. And so I didn't reconnect with them again until 2015 when I left Hee Haw.
Wow. Good story. So is there three of you today?
There's four of us today.
Four of you today. Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you find it with four of you in the business, sort of shareholders? Is that a good thing? Or does it mean your decision making takes longer because you all have to agree? Or
yeah, I mean, yes, probably our decision making is probably a little bit slower than it could be. But we all have, you know, we're all in the same path. We all know where we want to go. We know where we want the agency to be. We're very good at kind of sitting down, having board meetings every month. Let's like hash through all the decisions that have to be taken, discuss them all, and the action will be taken the next month. So, you know, although yes, we have to come to an agreement, touch wood, we've yet to disagree. Yeah. We seem to be on the same path, so it works well.
I do. It's funny. It's an observation that I've had just going into, you know, the volume of agencies I have been, you know, privileged to be able to do in the last 9 years, and obviously before that, and you know, I've really noticed that there is, you know, when it's a single agency owner, on one hand it can be quite lonely, you know, you don't have the support of other people around you.
Yeah.
You can make decisions quicker, you know, and I think probably the fastest decision making, you know, you've only got to convince one person about the journey of where you're going. And I love what you just said then about the four of you, you know, all agree with that journey, because I think that is the secret. I think, you know, when you go to four shareholders or more, I think I notice it when I go into board meetings, it takes, you know, three times longer at least to come to a decision, because everyone's got to have an opinion. Everyone's got to have a perspective. I mean, and sometimes you could argue the decision is better because it has more people, but mm-hmm. other times it definitely causes an additional layer of procrastination. But I think what I love about what you just said is that whole kind of joined up vision. I think it's one of the most important things that all agencies, you know, shareholders have got to have, and you've got to be honest with each other, haven't you? Like, you've almost, if yeah. one of you doesn't want to go on as far in the journey, then say so sooner, because mm-hmm. you know, I worked with one agency, and one of the shareholders, they wanted to go at about like when their stake was worth a certain level of money, they wanted to leave, so we helped them buy them out so the other shareholders could take it on to the next level. So I think that's you know, it's always quite good to share these nuggets when we come across them in conversations, because I don't get to talk about that much. So when you went there, how many people were in the team?
When I joined, there were six of us. I made seven, and we're now up at 12.
12. And were you 12 before COVID? Is that, how's that affected you?
We were 11 before COVID. Oh, okay. And now, so now we're up at 12. And we're adding, we're going to add another developer as well. We're in a really good place, actually, despite COVID. We obviously had that big drop, like everybody did in April, May, kind of going, nobody's spending money, everyone's sitting still. And then I think as the whole kind of world and all of our clients got back into the swing of just actually you can be productive and we can all still be working, and we want part of the economy to continue to work. And also we were well positioned to really support clients who needed to move and needed to, you know, try something different, you know, whether they're doing all their events online, whether they needed to offer a portal into a different tool because you can meet anyone in person. So we were well positioned to really support our clients and kind of help them.
And I think the space that you're in, you know, I think it's only mindset that will hold back any agency that has technology at the heart of what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as, you know, you've got technology and you're, whether it's in your marketing or in your service delivery, you know, and for you guys especially, you know, I just said this in the last interview, you know, COVID's been the biggest accelerator of business transformation, and you know, most businesses are behind the technology curve. They're not in front of it like they used to be. And so you know, people, agencies like yourselves, really, if you can keep your mindset positive and you can build your awareness enough in the market, you should be an abundance of business out there. I think it's just unfortunate for some of the people in the tougher sectors, like the event space and high street retail, some of those areas maybe where transformation is not been as fast.
Yeah, and I do think there's just a huge opportunity. I mean, obviously COVID has been a disaster, you know, culturally, economically, you know, it's horrible. But at the same time, I do think there's a massive opportunity, you know, to change our general culture, to change our attitude to work, the way that we kind of view productivity, kind of team morale, bringing technology in a much more positive way, you know, not kind of looking at it like the social dilemma way, but seeing how, you know, it can really benefit and actually make our work life kind of balanced much better. Because certainly, I mean, our team used to mostly work in the office. We did have flexible working, but the majority, you know, chose to base themselves primarily here. Now everybody's working from home. Everyone's quite happy working from home. We made sure everyone had their kit. They were, you know, kind of well tooled up to work from home. Lots of them are now kind of saying, well, you know, maybe I'll drop in 1-2 days a week. It's fine. If anything, our productivity's gone up. You know, we chat less at the coffee machine. And the guys are all like really enjoying just working from home. And we have lots of meetings and lots of interactions in different ways. But yeah, I think if you can look at it at that with a positive mindset, there's huge, huge kind of positives we can take from this situation.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's definitely, well, I love the attitude, and I think you're 100% right. And so, and it's funny, it came up in the last interview I did, just everyone, especially, and you know, your types of agency, most of the people in the business are communicating on Slack anyway, right? So as soon as they go remote, well, there's not much difference, really. I mean, you know, in some ways it hasn't really slowed down. I've actually only come across a couple of agencies where their productivity has dropped as a result of going remote. And I do think there are some issues around creative collaborations and things like that, where, you know, being face to face is a good thing. And so you touched on the social element, and I'd just like to ask you about that as well. Like, I think it's been probably the big hot topic of the last fortnight or so now. And I actually found myself coming off Facebook about 2 years ago when the privacy thing first started. And I think, you know, having watched it the other night, I feel really torn because I'm still on Instagram and I'm still on WhatsApp.
Yep.
But really, apart from LinkedIn, I could probably live without all of it. And I would like to call myself someone who's got very strong mental health resilience, mainly because I don't know, maybe I'm just of that era where, you know, we worked so hard when we were younger that actually now it's not that much harder. It doesn't, I don't know. We don't, maybe this, I've been on the screen for so many years, I'm used to it, but I think it's weird that, you know, it's like my mental health definitely got affected by Facebook. I don't know why, but when I came off it, I realized that I just, it, you know, I felt happier. You know, I did. I don't know. It's, I felt like it was a burden and not, and it's weird. So I think it, it is having a negative impact on, and I wonder, and the reason I'm leading on this question with you is, as we now move into this, you know, era of advancement on technology, this move towards singularity or machine learning, I just wonder, you know, I wonder how ethical we're going to be about our approaches to it, rather than just willful blindness going into, you know, manipulation.
Absolutely. I mean, I sat watching The Social Dilemma with my husband, who's not, you know, he's not in this industry. He works completely in a completely different industry. And he was kind of aghast at, like, the things that, you know, they were kind of telling you about. And I sat there feeling both kind of a bit depressed that I was in this industry that was doing so much harm. But at the same time, kind of going, well, I'm really pleased I am in this industry, because I'm so aware that actually all of this is going on and I have a knowledge and an understanding. But then on the other side, I do think that kind of ethical responsibility side is going to almost have to weave its way back through the whole industry, probably eventually kind of right down to people like us who are, you know, putting third party apps on websites so that we can monitor, you know, your movements around a website. Should we be telling everybody very clearly, not buried in the cookie kind of policy, but very upfront? And I think there will have to be a big shift into where that responsibility lies, because I don't think we can just, you know, leave it at Facebook and say, well, if Facebook are doing it, then why should any of the rest of us do it? It's not responsible, and it's not, you know, I don't think it's what the community should be doing going forward. But it's, yeah, there's a behemoth to stop. Wow.
There was a great quote, which I'm never going to remember it now because I'm live on air, but it was when I was at South by Southwest. It was Wes on the remember the box set, Wes, was it Westworld, the where they're all AI? Yeah. Did you ever see it?
Yeah.
And it was one of the producers there, and he said, you know, if we go into AI with as much planning as we did with social media, we're all doomed, or words to those effect. And I thought he's right. You know, like,
yeah.
I think, you know, the thing that concerned me the most, I really want to get my kids to watch it. If anyone hasn't watched it, please, yeah, I think it's go on to Netflix and yeah. You know, do watch the show. And I'd like my kids to watch it, because I want them to be self-aware of the information that's being shown to them is controlled, it is manipulated, and it is a rabbit hole. Because I mean, I'm obviously, we're on YouTube live now, and I love YouTube. I pay my subscription, but it does send you down rabbit holes. You know, you watch one episode, and yeah, like if you start with Joe Rogan, you always end up on some kind of extreme, you know, obscure channel about something. You know, it's quite funny how it just thinks you're going to go down this path, and it takes you there.
Yeah, and I think that was the most interesting thing I took away from The Social Dilemma, and I can't remember his name, that awesome guy with the dreads, who just said, if you do one thing differently on social, like if you're, you know, fair enough, you're not going to delete all your channels, but if you do one thing, just don't click on the recommended video, like don't give it more fuel, just be mindful that you should just go and search for something else that you want to see. Don't just blindly just keep hitting play. And it was really interesting. I thought, yeah, of course, because then they can't pigeonhole you quite as easily.
I always find myself in echo chambers I don't believe in. Like it's quite I'll find that my, like when I was on Facebook, especially, one of the reasons I came off it is actually I'd find the opinions of some people I knew completely contra to my opinions. And actually it was weird. And I thought sometimes it would just assume that I was somebody that I wasn't, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't like that kind of collective, you know, we're going to lump you into that. Like
yeah,
that.
It's almost, yeah, it's, you know, definitely, yes, it's very, very weird. So, but yeah, that's just almost like a bit of a topical news story from the day. So how many years have you now been at Primate? So it's what, about 6 years now?
Yeah, 6 years. Yeah, 6 years now.
And so you have, by the way, I'm just about to start this part of the conversation, and it's almost like the heavens have opened up over Michelangelo and you. It's like there's an angel beaming. Is it my brightness, or genuinely, is there like these rays of light coming through your window to the left?
There probably will be. So we've got skylights right the way along.
It's quite
like this
magical.
Big
It's quite magical. It actually looks like there's some divine intervention. You're getting some rays of beams of light being blasted over you right now.
Oh, well, maybe. Finally. Come on in.
Someone's looking after you somewhere, I think.
They do.
So Now I've said that, I'll probably get loads of YouTube recommendations for religious channels or something.
Yep.
Michelangelo adverts start appearing museum trips on my Instagram account.
I got an email this morning that reminded me that I got ordained into the Universal Life Church 5 years ago so that I could marry my best friends. And they sent me an email this morning and it was just like that, with this kind of big sun at the very top, and they were going, Reverend Rebecca, where have you been for the last 4 years? How are you doing? How many things have you, you know, kind of presided over? None so far. Next year. That's Anna's wedding's next year. Next year.
That's a good story. So tell us then a little bit about your journey, and in particular, you know, I think there is, I'm sort of hedging when I say this now, I think there's some really important lessons to come from the story that you can share with us now. And I think putting, you know, I often talk about the work-life balance, but the reality is that work and life, off for many business owners, it integrates, you know, it blends together, doesn't it? Like, you know, there never is a true switch on and switch off.
No.
And it's how you manage that integration is really important. But that said, sometimes, you know, you have to kind of put perspective on, you know, on your life and your work. And I'm sure you can probably share that experience better with me. So let's share with everyone, because everyone's wondering what the hell I'm talking about.
What we're talking about.
Your journey.
So obviously I joined Primate in 2015, and we've worked really hard to kind of grow the business, but it was very organic growth. And so in 2018, we decided, right, we're going to go for it. Let's invest. We're going to move into a bigger office. We had to anyway, they were demolishing the old one. We invested in a business coach. You know, we really pulled the team together, and we invested heavily, and 2019 was going to be our big growth year. You know, we had big numbers we wanted to hit. We had clients and accounts we wanted to bring on. We put absolutely everything kind of down, and we were going, right, 1st of January, here we come, like this is our growth year. I got married in September 2018, just towards the end of the year, and in October 2018 my husband wasn't feeling that well. It just felt like he permanently had like a bit of a bug, but there was nothing wrong with him. And then around about the end of the October, he had a lymph node kind of come up in his neck, and he was being a boy about it. And I'm going to just put you all in there, because none of you go to the doctor fast enough. And I said to him in the car, actually, you know, you have to go to the doctor and check about this, because what if it's cancer? That bad wife sentence. And on the 21st of December, he was diagnosed with stage 3 head and neck cancer. And it had started in his tonsils, and it had now spread down all of the lymph nodes in his neck, and it was one away from his lungs. And if it had gone into his lungs, we were stage 4, different kettle fish, but we were in stage 3. And so, yeah, kind of the world fell apart. It was the 21st of December.
So you'd only been married for a month when you recognized that, and by
three months later, he was diagnosed. Oh. And so it was a fairly quiet Christmas. Actually, do you know, on the day that he was diagnosed, we just sort of got the news, and that was it. And it was all over the phone, because it was Christmas, and, you know, there's a bit of a shutdown, but there's not a huge shutdown in the NHS, so we couldn't get in to see his consultant. And we just kind of called everybody and pulled everyone together in our local pub. And we had this really weird kind of, everyone would come in and people would cry and people would laugh, and then there were kids and there were dogs. And it was actually, weirdly looking back, it was such a nice evening.
So can I get this right? So you got everyone to the pub to tell them, or you told them?
No.
Got them all together afterwards. Oh, okay.
All on their own on the phone. And then
I was like, wow, that's pretty, pretty brave. But I guess in a way it was quite good to get everyone to come out and, you know, see you in one go and talk about it. Stuff.
Yeah. And then when you're diagnosed with cancer, you know, the NHS, whilst everyone complains about, you know, it taking weeks to get a GP appointment or, you know, various other issues, it truly envelops around you. Like, there's the process, and you are on that conveyor belt, and you are not getting off until they're finished. So on the 7th of January, he was having surgery to have his tonsils removed and have that cancer removed. And he was on chemotherapy by the first week in February.
Whoa. So actually, you know, it's, first of all, there was I saw an article the other day, actually, and there was a news reader on telly, and they had a lump in their neck, And someone who watched the show had written into her and said,
I saw this, yeah.
Yeah, you need to get that checked out. And she did. And it was this, probably, you know, the same thing, a lymph in the neck. Yeah. And yeah, basically saved her life. She didn't really even realize, well, maybe she didn't save her life, but she certainly made her aware of it earlier than it would have done. How did it affect you at work at that point? So obviously he did, what happened about work and the business in particular?
Yeah, so I was, obviously you have no knowledge, you have no idea what you're going into, you're fairly certain it's going to be a bit rough, but you have absolutely no idea what train you're about to get on, and you know, how sick or how well, or how well the person will cope, you know, will they, you know, you have no idea. So I was really resolute at the start, going, right, you know what, I'm going to work full time. If necessary, I'll do condensed hours, chuck it into 4 days. You know, I'm going to be here. I'm going to make sure everything kind of ticks along. It'll be fine. And fairly soon it became apparent that that was not possible. But we probably waited a bit too long. Like, in hindsight, looking back, we didn't make the switch fast enough. I was still heading up new business and all of our sales, and like just dropping balls left, right and center. And as his journey kind of went on, so Keith's chemotherapy was really, really intensive. He had like 5 days at a time inpatient chemo. So he was very, very sick on the other side of it. So I would have to take kind of days off to really help him at home. And then I would come back and, you know, try and get into tenders and pitches and proposals. But maybe then a week's gone past and you've missed that chance to talk to the client. And, it, you know, looking back, it was just all unraveling kind of slowly. Mm. But we hadn't stepped back and kind of taken that bigger picture. And by that point, I was kind of not in the headspace to be able to take that step back and go, wow, okay, what's happening? So it wasn't until the end of April that actually the guys, and this is where, you know, it's funny you say, how does it work with a four-person kind of director team? Without the three of them, like, I mean, if this was my agency on my own, would it be here? Probably not, because I had no choice but to take, I think I took 7 weeks out in the end when he was really, really unwell. And I had to step out because my mental health was suffering. You know, I was a complete mess. By that point, he'd picked up neutropenic sepsis. He was really, really sick. You know, we were then in radiotherapy, so we were at hospital every single day for a month and a half. It's brutal and it's laborious. And there was no real physical way that I could have been in the business and running the business at the time.
I mean, I think many people listening maybe have been through this. And, you know, I unfortunately lost my mother to cancer about 4 years ago. And it's fine. And I had to go through those hospital visits with her while she had treatment. And actually for her, it was, you know, it was, you know, many years. I think it was probably about 6 or 7 years from memory, you know, but it's very draining, isn't it? It is an emotional, it does have an emotional impact on people around, you know, that the person who's ill and stuff. So it's, you have to give a lot of energy and you, like, so you're doing like new business. So I'm guessing that there's not really anybody else in the business that can do that, is there, or was there, or it's quite a hard thing to delegate away in a smaller agency.
It's a really hard thing to delegate away, and it's hard because we, you know, we were very much kind of in our roles and in our lanes, and so the only way, you know, and Gordon would come in and we'd really support kind of new business and that process like all the time. But he, you know, he also did, he's like our FD. He's also, you know, kind of was MD at the time. So he has a whole raft of other issues that he has to manage on a daily basis. You know, Bart's our technical director. He's running the studio. Steve's our design director. He's ensuring everything that we output is quality. You know, so we have our good lanes. So it was a real switch up to try and kind of pull Gordon in. And I did have to drop him in it twice, actually. So we had a huge pitch for a potential client, which was absolutely incredible. It was a great opportunity. We spent a ton of time doing it. You know, that usual agency way where you leave it till the very last minute. So we're like 48 hours out and still doing the pitch deck and working all through all of that. Keith got sepsis. And at 8 o'clock that morning, I had to call Gordon. I was in floods of tears because they couldn't get his temperature down. He was spiking up well over 39. He was kind of had these permanent kind of convulsions, which I now know is just febrile convulsions. So it's when you're too warm, your body kind of shakes to try and chill itself out. But at the time, I'm just like, all right, well, he's clearly going to have a seizure, die. And so I just picked up the phone and had to say to Gordon, you have to take the pitch. I can't be there. And we're a small agency. We don't have pitch teams that, you know, I can't just say, hey, pitch team B, do you mind kind of coming in? Can you run it for me? That would be great. So he had to pick it up and, you know, he had to finish the deck. He had to get right inside the tender. And I'm always our agency. I'm always our tender lead. So it was really, it was a real challenge getting back out of there. And it was not detrimental. You know, our turnover massively contracted. We made a financial loss at the end of the year. You know, we can look back and we can see the impact. You can see it on sales. You can see billing drop, sales drop. You can see it in the financials from last year.
So I know there's a lot more to your story that's coming in a minute, but in the meantime, but when you look back to that point, you know, what advice would you give other people, you know, in the, you know, extraordinary, because, you know, agency life is full of challenges. It really is, isn't it? There isn't a week or a month or a year that goes by without something being a challenge in the business. Yeah. But when it becomes something that's almost, you know, more a matter of life or death. I mean, I had a good friend of mine whose sister used to work in the business, and she used to always say, you know, we're building websites, not saving lives. You know, when it was always the clients would get quite dramatic about business. But when it is, you know, someone, you know, close to you that gets ill, and it means that, you know, as a business owner, you know, you're whether it's a family member or whether it's, you know, a partner, what advice would you give now for people to do in those situations? Is there anything you can do?
I mean, looking back, the first thing you have to do is, you know, I remember right at the very start, actually, we sat down with Keith, and you get a specialist nurse who kind of helps you through treatment. And I said to Linda, look, my background is account management, project management. You know, I need the entire roadmap of this. Okay. I need to know when everything's starting. I need to know what the entire treatment process is going to look like. That'll really help me manage it. I can manage Keith. You know, we can get through this that way if you give me all the information now. And she just stood up and turned to me and said, you can't project manage medicine, and you definitely can't project manage cancer. And I remember, like, so vividly being so offended, going, you don't know who I am, and you don't know, like, what I could do and how I can help project manage this. And she's completely right. You have no idea. You know, you're one day you're fine, the next day you've got temperature, you're back in the hospital being checked for an infection, you're out of the hospital, you're vomiting uncontrollably for no apparent reason, you're on different medication, you have another scan. It's, you know, they can't tell you what's going to happen because they really flex as your body responds to the treatment. But I think the biggest takeaway would be, you know, get perspective. Everybody needs to kind of step back and say, right, let's expect the worst. Okay, let's expect you to be out of the business for 12 weeks. What does that look like? How's that going to impact us? How can we budget? Who can we bring in? Can we bring in, you know, kind of consultants? Can we bring in support? Can we really switch up the team? And just expect the worst. I mean, our business continuity plan was not worth it. You know, it just wasn't worth anything until we really tested it. So definitely doing that and just getting some perspective, even if it's outside perspective, is really, really key and beneficial.
Sounds like some really good advice there. I think, I think that's, you know, it's, I think, yeah, definitely for me, you know, having some kind of it's very hard to have business continuity plans for everything because let's face it, you don't know what's going to happen to you in life, and none of us could have predicted COVID, well, apart from Bill Gates. But I think, you know, but it is, you know, I think when these things happen, as hard as it will be emotionally, I'm sure, I guess there'll be a lot of peace of mind. At least you can come up with a plan. And I think the outside advice thing, I think, is good, because I think you sometimes there may be more experience as well, just on what other things could happen that you don't know as a consequence. So how,
but also listening, sorry, just to jump in, listening to that advice, because by pure chance, our business coach, who was incredible, when I explained to her that Keith's diagnosis, it turned out her husband had the same cancer 2 years before. And she sat me down and she said, you realize you're going to have three hats now. You're going to have your business hat, you're going to have your wife hat, and you're going to have your carer hat. And you're going to spend a lot more time wearing the carer hat than you understand. And I kind of scoffed and went, oh, like, you're in your 60s. Like, it's not going to be the same. It was absolutely the same. It was exactly the same. But I think there's also a bit of ostriching. Like, you know, I don't want to consider how bad it might get. So let's just roll with it. But in terms of kind of business management, it's absolutely the worst thing you could do.
Yeah. So did you ever find out what caused the cancer with your husband? Was it?
It was just a virus, and it mutated basically, and had become cancerous. And he wasn't
wow.
a heavy smoker. He was nothing. And it's hard, you know, cancer diagnosis now, you know, very few of them are caused directly by, you know, if you've smoked 60 a day for 30 years, then yes, possibly they can absolutely attribute it. But so many other factors now, kind of lifestyle, the fact we live in the Western world, we have a much higher incidence of cancer than kind of Eastern world. Hormones, age, you know, diet, yeah. exercise, everything has this like tiny little nuance to it that will impact cancer.
And so what happened into him in that next period? I mean, what was the next thing that happened after where we got up to?
So after I took those kind of 7 weeks off to really be with him and help yep. him out. You know, because of where his cancer was, he had a lot of radiotherapy on his neck, so he lost the ability to swallow temporarily and kind of speak. And gosh. So you have to do a lot of rehab to kind of get that all back up. So yeah, it's really good diet. He lost 20 kilos in 6 months. but after radiotherapy,
it's funny you can laugh about it now. I wonder how long it's been. I'm sitting there like shocked, you know, you're laughing. It's like there's obviously a time where it's okay, you can laugh at the cloud having a silver lining, yeah. losing weight. So
do you know, I think it's also really encouraged by like the medical teams that he had. The nurses are so dark and their banter is exceptional. You know, like these people are really unwell and sick, you know, on a hospital ward, gravely ill, you know, and they're still taking the piss and kind of really yeah. winding them up. And it's great because it brings some levity and some not joy, but just some lightness to that situation. And I think we realize, and his, you know, his consultant was really sarcastic and dark, and he always had a dark joke for everything. And we just kind of absorbed that, and that's who we are now. So yeah, we make terrible cancer jokes now.
That's so funny. So he lost his voice.
Yeah. And then fast forward a couple of months, 13th of August, which was also my birthday. It was a dangerous game by his consultant. He was given the all clear, and he was cleared wow. of cancer and cured. And we were sent off on our merry way, which was incredible.
It's amazing. And so yeah, how is he today?
He's great. He's super healthy, kind of back up to his normal weight. He ran part of the virtual London Marathon at the weekend with my brother from Macmillan. Yeah, super, super fit. I mean, you would never recognize. In fact, we met his consultant a couple of months ago, and he was saying, you just don't look like the same person. Like wow. you're so well now. And the chance of his cancer coming back is exceptionally slight. It's down at like 4% over 15 wow. years. So okay. so they consider him cured, and that's it.
So where are we up to? We're up to August 2019.
Mm-hmm. So fast forward 49 days, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh no.
So yeah, it was a year. So we had 49 days cancer free in 2019.
Just
and crazy. Actually it kind of actually goes right the way back to April though. So that those months where I was super stressed, super unwell, had to step out of the business.
Yeah,
that's when I found a lump, and I just thought nothing of it. I thought, oh, well, it'll be nothing, I'll ignore it. And so I ignored it right the way up until August, and even my GP said, oh, it'll be nothing, but let's just refer you just in case. Yeah. You know, you don't need any more stress and worry. So I got referred, and I met my lovely consultant who said, oh, it's probably nothing, but let's check. And then came back and said, yeah, no, actually you're scoring a 5 out of 5 on all of our tests, which means there's a 90% chance that this is cancer, but we'll confirm next week.
Oh no, you had to wait another week.
You had to wait.
That must have been a tough week.
And it was the week of our wedding anniversary, so we were down in Bath. You know, we had planned this big fancy weekend away, which was awesome. We still had some great times, but we also drank quite a lot of red wine and sort of worried about what was coming next. And of course, it came.
So do you think that because of that what had happened with your husband, had that helped you deal with this mentally, or not really? It's still
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm an information person. I like information. I like data. So the fact that I was after him, I knew exactly what was coming, and like, it really helped me kind of process it. Like how, by the, that yeah. week, everyone else around us was holding on to the 10%, going, no, you're due some luck. It's absolutely not going to be cancer. But I had already kind of said, right, no, it will be cancer. Let's just start processing this. You know, yeah. let's just accept it. If it wasn't, then it'd be a nice surprise. But I had already kind of gone on that grief cycle, kind of let's work yeah. through this process and then let's just get straight back into treatment. So for me personally, it was the right way around, if I was going to call it either way around.
Yeah. And so you'd been started to get back into the business at that point as well. So you're just starting to get back totally to normal. Back.
Yeah. I was totally back into the business. We were back on our growth plan. I actually was so convinced that there was nothing, that I had meetings all lined up in the afternoon. So, you know, I had my appointment in the morning, but meetings in the afternoon. So just after, you know, the doctor kind of told me this, I had to call Gordon and say, hey, okay, bad news. They think it's cancer, but also, can you take over the two meetings that I've got scheduled this afternoon? So it was both like a call to tell you some crap news and also a call to just like get some business continuity happening again. So yeah, I was fully back in the business and we were about to have to make the switch all over again.
Oh no. And how was the business doing at that stage without, you know, was it, you mentioned before that you look back at the numbers and you know, how was it doing even though you had the coach and the advice? By that point
we were very much in recovery mode. So actually sales were going up, kind of billing was going up, because the last two quarters really pulled it back for us. Without the final two quarters, we, you know, it would have been even worse. But actually, yeah, we kind of got to a point where we were building back up again, and you know, kind of we're making a bit more profit, and it was going well. But this time around, we didn't wait. So we switched everybody's roles, the director's roles, straight away. So Bart, our technical director, became ops. So he'd headed up everything that was leaving the studio, including planning and everything else. I came out completely and was just a support to sales. Gordon moved fully into sales. And our other team members kind of moved around to really support all of those angles. Yeah. And it worked really, really well. It worked perfectly.
And you guys, did you guys ever at any time think, you know, you need to check out of this, like you need to check out of the business and just change your whole life? I mean, did it give you life changing aspirations, or was that never an option?
No, so it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed my aspirations.
I guess you still have to earn a living, right? So
yeah, no, we still have to earn a living. And I will say, I have done cancer now two ways. We've done cancer without insurance because Keith had no critical illness, and we've done cancer with insurance because I had critical illness as a director. And if there's another thing that you can take away from it, like go and factor in insurance for the worst possible scenario, like whether it's income protection or critical illness or health insurance, get it, like just invest in it as early as possible and just let it run, whether it's through the business, whether it's personal, because the difference it makes is that it's just one less thing that you have to manage.
Do you know, I think that is a wonderful piece of advice to share to people. I think, you know, for the amount of money it costs to have it, you know, and again, whether it's through the business or it's personal, it just seems like a very sensible thing to do. I mean, we always talk about things like key man insurance, but I think critical illness cover is one of those things that, you know, you never need it till you need it, right? It's like it's, yeah. but actually, for the small investment it costs, it probably will just give you that extra. But it wasn't stressful dealing with that when you had to claim, though.
No, and I will say it's probably one of the easiest insurance claims I've ever made. And I don't know if it's just because they know that everybody's in a sort of state of heightened stress and anxiety anyway.
Sure.
So they make the process easier. But I mean, I literally had to call my insurance company, explained what had happened. They sent a letter to my consultant who replied, and that was it. Dropped into bank account.
Yeah, I think that, I think you sharing that piece of advice is invaluable. So you had to now go through your treatment from what, September onwards, was it?
Yes, yeah, so I was diagnosed on the 1st of October. So like you've got your 1 year agency phonics.
Yeah.
I've got my 1 year cancer anniversary. So 1st of October, we did some emergency IVF for a month, which made me crazy. God bless the team for living with me for that month. And then I started chemo on the 29th of October. And again, though, so kind of looking back, I was resolutely not going to leave the business again this time. I was like, no, I'll work through treatment. I will, you know, I will be here. I'll work part time. I'll take a week off for chemo.
Why was that? Do you think you'd be, did you think it'd make you feel happier to work? Or well, why was that? Tell me. I'll stop guessing.
I know I do. I love work. And I loved being in this agency and in the industry and just in that kind of that flow. And I just didn't want to give it up. I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to step out. But the other directors had to stage an intervention come December. And I was kind of sat down very quietly at our board meeting. And they said, look, we just want you to get well. Could you please just take some sick time? Like, just take a month initially. And then maybe it'll go to two. And maybe it'll go to three. But just go out of the business. Because also, actually, I had become... I was more detrimental by that point. You know, I was ill. I was in and out. So nobody really knew when I was in, when I wasn't in. So I couldn't lead anything. You know, client comms, you know, there's no point sitting with me. I was a real distraction as opposed to a support to the business then. So again, it was the best call, but it's that perspective. You don't have that perspective when you're in that fight or flight kind of panic. How do I make a logical decision mode? You just can't. It's like physically impossible.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know whether you use Office Vibe to measure your staff satisfaction, but a lot of the clients I work with do. And I feel like I'm sponsored by Office Vibe because I talk about them all the time. I'm not at all, but it is a great tool. And what I learned from it, Rebecca, was that in agencies, there's a part of it, which is it surveys all your team on how happy they are. And one of the sections is called well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And I have got some eight. And if you're doing well, you get a green bar. And if you're not doing well, I think it goes orange. And it's like in every agency, they'll have like 10 sections of the business that are surveyed. And most of my clients will have nine out of the 10 will all be green. But the wellness one is always orange. It's always the lowest score, even in the agencies that are in the top 1% on the planet on their NPS scores. The wellness is always the lowest score. And I put it down to the fact that in agencies, there is this inherent stress of deadlines. And, you know, there's always and you can't remove that, you know, and you can't remove the stress that is often caused by clients demands and you know, not being reasonable or unreasonable, but they're meeting their expectations. Yeah. and things do go wrong, right, whenever you're working on projects, and you know, time slips, and you know, yep, clients delay sign-offs, and you have people ill, and so these problems manifest, you know this from your account, yep, manager, project management days. And so I guess it, you know, in a way, this is our industry, I think, you know, has got some stresses in it, like, you know, the way we are. And so for you going back into the work, some people thrive off the stress, but I never really understand, like, I thrive off stress, but I never understand if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I kind of think I tell myself it's a good thing, but probably deep down my body probably doesn't like it, you know. It's
I was the same person. I thrived off stress. Like, I loved that, you know, that last minute rush right up to the end of a pitch where you're just working flat out and you've got that adrenaline buzz. And I find, you know, I could really focus. But I also look back and just think that's such a bad way to live now. It's so detrimental to your health. And I've completely changed my approach to kind of stress now. I just don't let things stress me out the way it used to. I mean, I could get myself into the point, you know, when you feel almost like you're buzzing, like you've got that vibration with kind of levels of stress. But I also think it's cultural, and I don't think it's just in our industry. I think, you know, across our culture, we have a huge kind of tendency to really kind of reward bad behavior. So like, oh, you're super stressed and you're super busy. Well, that's great. You must be really successful. You know, unless you have 25 things on, you know, are you successful? We really celebrate that busyness, you know, over-exercising, going out, like party hard, work, you know, work hard, play hard. And I think that really has to shift. And I think maybe COVID is a good catalyst for that. You know, everyone had to stop for, you know, 6 months and go, right, well, what's happening now.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you. I think COVID, I mean, it certainly, you know, I am from that that era of, you know, of working hard. I always say it, you know, I say, you know, I think to be successful, unfortunately, you do have to, I do believe you have to work hard. And yeah. I believe you can work smart, but I think what you've got to do is almost work hard and then get clever and optimize and become smarter. So you're not, you know, you're not working as hard, but you're certainly still achieving the same output. So yeah. I think COVID has really helped a lot of people work smart. I would definitely think that, you know, for example, you know, I probably used to commute 20 hours a week and I don't have to do that now because of COVID. And that means I have more time. I'm at home earlier in the evening. I'm at home later in the morning. And, yeah. you know, and so actually personally, I think COVID's been great for me. And I honestly, I think I was probably talking about retiring in 5 years. The beginning of this year, I did my 10-year plan. And I realized that, you know, 10 years from now, I probably wouldn't want to be working anymore. And actually started to think about a 5-year plan. But because COVID, and because I'm not working as hard and I'm not as stressed, I fall back in love with my job again. And actually I never really fell out of love with it, but now I can see 10 years. And what I'm trying to say here is I think a lot of people get tired in their jobs and they get stressed. And actually sometimes it's just about changing the way you approach it to suit you. But nevertheless, I do find sometimes people go the other way. And I just say this as someone who, you know, who mentors business, where almost like it's so relaxed that it's almost like it's got, you know.
Yeah, you're going to go nowhere.
Yeah, you're going to go nowhere. And that's and I think that's, by the way, probably the reason why I never started another agency after I sold mine, because I did the 63-hour pitch with 3 hours sleep. And like you said, and I was kind of convincing myself that I was loving it. But I think when I stopped, I had to go, you know what, it's going to kill me if I keep doing this, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think it's about working differently as well, you know, because I mean, if you look back to March to now, you know, I'm sure Cactus is equally or if not as successful without you, you know, kind of doing the day-to-day that you used to do. And you know, we're finding the same, you know, we're working differently. And you know, even if those small changes kind of can reduce the stress. I used to make that joke all the time. Nobody died. Okay, nobody's going to die because, you know, a website element is delivered late, or, you know, because they're not super happy with that design. You know, none of us are going to die. And I do think we need to keep that mindset and that focus and just not, I don't react anymore. I could get a spiky client email about something previously and it would really eat me up and I would, you know, I'd be overly stressed about it. And now I have a completely different approach. It just does not worry me. And I don't stress about the, you know, where the business is going or the success of the business anymore. And I think actually it's having a much greater effect on the business. You know, but we've got this mindset, we've got this approach, and sales are going up.
I love that. And I'm with you 100%. I think it certainly you've had to find ways to probably work smarter. COVID's forced that a lot. I mean, I think we'll have our best year ever, which is crazy considering what's happened. And I was telling someone that, you know, everyone would always demand to see us face to face. You know, they want, but actually the reality is that because, you know, where people rate our days, when I work with Pete, we use MPS to rate our days. And I said to Pete jokingly, I bet our score goes down to an 8 or 9 when we do our workshops remotely. And then we kept scoring 10. And in fact, I would say the service is probably better remotely than it is in person, because there's less distractions. You get through much more. Yeah. I haven't had a drive and stuck in a traffic jam that could have made me anxious or angry or wound up that's not to say there aren't some negatives, obviously, to working remotely. Like, it's still, you know, in some ways you can still fill the time up with commuting with more calls and more work. And we've had to do that a lot because we have to, you know, we do like to help people who are struggling, you know, through this period. We've helped a lot of people in our spare time. But I guess, you know, you are right. We do carry on sometimes working the way we've always done, and we don't stop and relook at it and go, is there a smarter way that will be better for us, you know, for our, for this work life, you know, balance? And what's been great about everything you said, because I heard a talk recently about someone in a similar situation, and the person was saying, what's really more important, you know, work or, you know, like, but of course it's very difficult, because the reality is that, you know, some people need to still earn a living. You still got to pay for things, right? And there could be more stress caused by not having any income.
Absolutely.
And so it's, you know, yes, you could probably change your job, but it doesn't mean it's going to be any less stressful because of other factors, you know? So what's interesting is you kept working. Sorry, I'll get to my point.
Yeah.
You pursued working with your job. You didn't go, we're just going to check out now, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I kept working right the way up to December until I was kind of politely asked to leave. Which was exactly what I needed and what the business needed, for sure. But in that first month in January, my mental health nosedived. I was absolutely miserable without work.
Right.
To the point that, you know, I was referred to the kind of the therapy service within my own cancer unit. And I needed a lot of help to kind of pull me back out. And you mentioned social media earlier. I came off everything. I ditched Instagram. Yeah. I ditched Facebook, all of it, just to try and, you know, I just got into reading books, not Kindles, being very quiet, going outside for dog walks, and doing very little else. Sleep. Oh my gosh, the restorative like qualities of sleep. We need sleep. And eventually, kind of come the end of January, I was feeling much better. And then, you know, so I went through all my treatment. I had chemotherapy. I had two surgeries. I had radiotherapy. And then the 1st of April, I kind of just fell back into the business because COVID hit, and we went, oh God, right. Come back in. How are we navigating ourselves out of here?
Did you need the extra stress of going back in the business so quickly, though? Or was it more stressful not being in the business?
I think for me, it was probably more stressful not being in the business. But I won't lie, that first month back in was like, there's something called chemo brain. So basically, because chemo kills off all your rapidly dividing cells, you really lose the ability to remember anything. So it was a huge challenge that first month. I had lists of comments that I had to kind of try and remember. But, you know, I think also as a company, we approached it completely differently. You know, we didn't kind of go, all right, well, this, you know, the worst is about to happen. The agency's going to collapse. We kind of went, all right, so let's expect a drop in sales. How else can we help? You know, let's put together some ideas. Let's go out to clients. Let's start talking to them. Let's keep comms up as much as we possibly can. It wasn't like a panic station moment. You know, we had some staff on furlough. You know, we did what everyone else did. But by June, everyone was back in the business and working full time.
Wow, that's really good. I think most people I came across got everyone back by about September. But to get everyone back by June, that's really good. So, well done to you guys. And so how are you today?
I'm good. I'm cured.
Wow, that's amazing. Both of you to go through that and to get the all clear.
Yeah, all clear. And now I just need COVID to go so that I can finally get on a plane and go somewhere sunny, because I had to postpone my honeymoon to Australia. And I just feel like we keep postponing it by another year and another. So like, I need COVID to go away next year.
If there's anyone that deserves a holiday to Australia or a honeymoon, then it's you right now, for sure. So, you know, that's really been, you know, a good 2 years of your life, really. That's been, I mean, and when COVID came as well, I mean, talk about icing on the cake. That's not the right saying, really, but talk about the final straw, you know, of like of things to hit, you know, to hit you guys.
But you know what? I'm cancer perk, right? I was in cancer treatment, so I was allowed to leave the house every week for like the first 2 months.
Oh, really?
So everyone else is stuck at home, and I was getting to go to hospital. I got 2 hours like away from my husband, because God, I love him and I'm so pleased that he's here. But, you know, it was intense living with him. So I would get to go to hospital, get one-on-one nursing care because of social distance. It was a proper perk. It was great. Yeah.
So, do you think it made you more, because of the you know, the difficult times that, you know, you and your husband had to go through dealing with cancer, do you think that when COVID came, it helped in any strange, peculiar way? Because it's like, when something really bad happens to you, surely everything else doesn't seem quite as bad.
totally.
Or not.
Yeah.
Did it help?
Absolutely. I mean, it does feel like we have lived lockdown for 2 years, like as opposed to 6 months. But we were so prepared for it because actually, like, lockdown life is chemo life. Okay. So if you're on chemo, you can't spend too much time near people. You can't hug people because, you know, you've got no immune system. You spend your life wearing either a mask or gloves or using hand sanitizer, and you're scared of every possible germ. Like, it's literally chemo life, except everybody got to live it. And for once, we had no FOMO, okay? All of you were doing nothing. You know, I can't sit at home and get really unhappy that, you know, cancer stopped my life and I can't go out and do these things because nobody was doing it. So I think, yeah, we were probably as best prepared as we could be mentally. And it wasn't as big a deal as it kind of could have become. But I certainly didn't feel like it was just a snowball and now we were stuck at home and everything. It was very much, well, done it before.
Yeah.
Well, it's another 6 months.
I like stories with happy endings because, you know, that's I'm one of these people. I go to the movie, if it's not a good ending, I'm not happy. So I'm really pleased with both of you. And I think it's very, you know, it's also very brave of you to share this story. And I guess, you know, time's gone on enough now, but, you know, to a certain degree that you probably get easier at telling the story and laughing about it as you are. But I'm really pleased with both of you. And I think there's some valuable lessons. I really hope people listening have taken, you know, a lot from this and just to stop and reflect, I guess, and said, you know, have we got critical illness? What would, you know, if something happened, what would our action plan be? Even if it's not the details of it, you know, to know in your head that they've heard this story and that actually first you just come up with a plan. Maybe get someone at local outside or whatever to help, you know, give some perspective on the business and what you should do, and or a couple of people anyway, at least. And
just have that. It's where that community actually, and kind of communities like Agentsynomics are so important, because actually, you know, then you have people you could have a conversation with and say, can we just get your opinion? Or, you know, I know that if the worst had happened, we could have pulled somebody else in. You know, we if we could budget for it, we could have got someone else in. Yeah, I think being a bit prepared is absolutely kind of key. And you know what? Being grateful, you know, I remember constantly wanting the agents to be bigger and, you know, bigger clients and let's just keep going and never kind of being grateful for where we are now. And I think just it's given me that perspective to kind of go, I love where we are now. Like, you know, 5 years ago, I would have loved to be where we are now. So a bit more gratitude and just pause and kind of enjoy the moment. And it's honestly so cliche. Every time I tell people that, I can see their face going, it's so cliched, but it is.
but, you know, moving forwards now, just my sort of the last question really on it is, when you look at your life moving forward, what have your priorities changed in any way?
I don't think my priorities have changed. I'm still hugely ambitious. We still have huge ambitions for the agency. You know, I want to go and have kids, which I think we should be able to do. You know, I still want to achieve everything, but I will go about it in a different way. You know, I will reduce the stress as much as possible. Yeah. I do not sweat the small stuff in the same way. You know, I had a flat tire the other day. Ugh, who cares? Like, I'll just call someone
off it. I love that you don't sweat the small stuff. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
I need to learn to do that.
But you know, actually, I took your burnout test the other day. So we lost a project I had poured my soul into because it was for the NHS, and I was convinced we were going to get it, and we didn't. And I took it really hard, really, really personally as well. And I felt really stressed.
Did you score high? I can't remember. Did you?
No, write? I took it and I scored 1.3.
Oh yeah, and I think I was with. That's amazing. So that shows. so just for people listening, there was a burnout test that someone shared online somewhere, and I put it into the community. But there was always a test that I used to do actually in the early days of Cactus. I don't do it so much anymore. But I remember my coach saying to me when I had my agency, Spencer, how stressed are you on a scale of 1 to 10? And I remember one day replying like 8 or something. And he said, 8 is really high. Like, if you answer, when someone asks you that question, it's funny. I think most people are quite honest with their replies. Like, I think it's quite a meaningful question, and therefore the reply is very meaningful. So when I at that time, and my business, my mentor, who was my business? What was he? It was my non-exec. My non-exec was saying to me, you know, you need to have a holiday. Because that's just too high, you know, and he was right. I hadn't had a holiday in a long time and I needed to have a break and a recharge. So when I started doing the service at Cactus, I started asking it to people quite often. And it was amazing how, you know, it would vary. And every now and then I'd come across a 9 or a 10, and I would be, it's almost like a red alert system. I knew that there's a problem there. So when I shared that test in the community, I thought it was actually quite, because I did it. What was interesting was my score was quite low, and I felt like I was reasonably stressed at the time I did it. But actually, I think it was brought down by the fact, I'm guessing like you as well, like if you love doing what you do, you know, I think that helps a lot. You know, if you really love your job, then you're not as stressed about things as much. If you resent your job, then I think it gets harder to keep the score down, or you get frustrated by it.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it's that, and it's that, for me, it was the mindset switch of just going, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, let's, bigger picture, there's always a solution. And actually, I come about kind of problems much more questioning. So rather than kind of getting your back up or trying to work out the solution, actually just asking more questions about it. And I found it completely changes the way I react and then the agency reacts to a problem, and then how we can manage a client as well.
Yeah. I think you've probably got something there. You've probably done this already now, but it's almost like there's a blog series called The Stress-Free Agency, you know? maybe we should do an Agency Nomics event soon called The Stress-Free Agency and get you to come and share all the things that agency people can do to make their businesses less stressful and, you know, less impact on personal and mental health, you know? Yeah. Because it is a real problem. You know, I think there is more and more support, more awareness now for these things. But and maybe luckily COVID's come along and maybe help everyone. The last person we just interviewed on this show, I think it was every single one of the staff didn't want to return to full time office work. Everyone. Okay. So that's everyone, that's everyone. I mean,
everyone. Yeah, I've seen the difference.
Not even half, that's everybody. And they're a 45-man agency, you know?
Wow.
So that's not to say they don't want to go there. They just don't want to go back full-time into an office 9 to 5, you know? So the world will definitely change because I think the demands will change of the team members, and hopefully...
And maybe COVID is everybody's cancer, you know? Like, it shouldn't have to take something. Like, I look back now and think, God, why did it take something life-threatening, you know, to kind of change everything? But it's completely worth it. And you know, I remember kind of doctors telling us mindset is really key to your recovery. You recover faster. Now, you cannot think yourself, well, chemo still saved my life, but mindset is so key to actually getting to the end the end prognosis faster.
Yeah.
And well.
I totally agree with that. I'm a big believer in that as well. So, it's been lovely speaking to you.
You too.
I think it's you've clearly got a fantastic agency. You know, it's you're going from strength to strength, and you know, to be recruiting, you know, even in a small way through this period and not contracting, and to, you know, for you and your husband to have gone through what you have done. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
I really appreciate you sharing the story too. I think it's been quite humbling and just a dose of reality as well.
Yeah, it was dark and stormy, but we're good now. We're at the other side. Still a bit dark, less stormy.
So my last question for you go is, where do you see your next 3 years? Like, do the four of you now? You said you'll have a joined up vision. I'm just curious to know. How have you done that? Have you said we're going to be this many people or this size, or how have you decided what's next?
So we've never put like a key number on it. We've never wanted to be like a big 60-man agency. We always felt that actually we could do the best possible work, like the best digital work out there, and have a real queue of people wanting to work with us because of the quality and because of the knowledge and because of the ways we approach design and really blend technology behind that. Because neither department is stronger than the other. And I think that's our real USP. You know, we are as good technically with anything as we are with design. And that's the real kind of differentiator for us. So yeah, the next 3 years, we want to grow. We want to get on bigger accounts. We want to bring on other clients. We want to grow all the clients that we've got as well. You know, we've got such an incredible client base who have really been with us through here. And we act very much like our clients' kind of digital partner. And I think that's another key. It's that relationship and wanting to see our clients, you know, do better than us if necessary. You know, I want to see them go further as a result of the digital work that they do with us. And so, yeah, this... We're coming back. You know, we were going to grow in 2019, 2021. This is it. We're gonna grow that little bit bigger.
Good. Well, there'll always be. I was always taught there's always one thing every year. So let's hope it'll be a small thing next year. You deserve a small thing after all that.
Yeah,
so
I'll take like a leak in the roof. That would be fine.
So listen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
it's been a great job.
You, when you watch this back, you're going to love the sunlight coming through. I think at one point you had, on my screen, it actually looked like you had this kind of like halo and sort of a loop. You know, there was an aura around your body and everything. So it was quite magical. I think you've got a great backdrop now for all your standing.
It's awesome, isn't it?
As well. So, yeah, thanks so much. So thanks, everyone, for listening. What a wonderful end to our first year. Well, my first year of vodcasting. I'm not a professional. I've kind of been learning as I go on the fly with this, but I've been very lucky to have some wonderful conversations with some wonderful agency owners and leaders. And I'm hopefully you're enjoying all these episodes. Please give me the feedback. Please like and follow. I think we're getting some real momentum now, so I really appreciate all of the support everyone gives us. And yeah, so I think I'll end on that note.